athletic competition. It can easily be broken down into two parts: the minutes or hours it takes to complete the event, then weeks, months, and years of joy or heartbreak. Finally, the decades to analyze and debate it. From the press box to press row, Donald Ware will break it all down for you with an in-depth look at historically black college athletics, as well as the biggest news stories and newsmakers of the day. It's time to talk the talk with those who walk the walk. From the press box to press row, here's your host, Donald Ware.
Thank you for joining me on another edition of the program. We've got a good one for you because you've got the NFL draft that is going on. You've got NBA playoffs. You've got NHL playoffs that are going on as well. So we just got a lot to get to on today's program. We're going to talk a lot of NFL draft. We're going to talk more towards the latter part of today's program in terms of the NFL draft, because I'll tell you what, we talk about the NBA hot and heavy, and let me set the table for you a little bit today here on the program. We're going to talk with Jason George, actor Jason George. You're going to know him as Dr. Ben Warren on Grey's Anatomy, and now formerly of Station 19. He also plays the role, the love interest of Eve in the TV series Eve. He's also going to join us today here on the program. He's a huge Philadelphia Eagles fan, so I want to talk with him about that, the Eagles winning the championships, and then also about his career as well. Look, last week, and look, you can participate here on the conversation. Hit me up via X at Box to Row, BoxToRow, or on my personal X account at DWare1, at DWare1. Follow me or follow Box to Row while you're there. So last week, I believe I said I thought the most intriguing series in the NBA Finals was going to be that of Houston and Golden State. And look, Houston, you know, Houston laid an egg. I mean, the bottom line is Houston laid an egg in game one, but I think a lot of that, and it's interesting because all of the series that we've seen, even the blowouts, you saw a lot of blowouts, most notably in that OKC and Memphis series on Sunday, where OKC beat Memphis by 51 points. It wasn't that way in the second game. And not only that, not only did you have some series that were closer in the second game, but you also had some teams flipping the script, a la the Clippers and the Nuggets. I thought in game one it was a game in which, you know, I want to give the Nuggets credit, because remember, even in that game, the Nuggets were without Michael Porter Jr. And I thought that the Clippers would win that game. I thought the Clippers gave it away a little bit, but I also thought that the Nuggets took that game as well. I mean, Russell Westbrook is like a super wild card, but he was so big. I mean, hit the clutch three-pointer for the Nuggets in game one. But then the Clippers turn right back around and win game two. And so we're where we are with that series, which really could go seven games. But back to the Rockets and the Golden State series, because I thought even coming into this series, and I said it last week, look, you've got teams that it takes them a while. Young teams that kind of come around, they'll have a good season, and then it'll take those teams a while, maybe a year or two. The first year, it's going to be a team that probably is not going to advance far in the playoffs, because you have to get used to the playoffs. It's a different level of basketball, and we saw that in most of the game ones, and we saw that from the Houston Rockets, even from the veteran players, a la Brooks, a la Van Vliet in that first game. And it was a situation where the team in of itself needed to kind of settle down, and it did. The young players, Amen Thompson, Jalen Green, needed to settle down as well, because it's a different level of playoff basketball. And when you're talking about playing against the likes of Steph Curry and Draymond Green, who have won 4 NBA championships, and then you're talking about playing against a Jimmy Butler, who is one of the clutch players who led, you know, has been in these in finals, NBA finals, hadn't won a championship yet, but has been in plenty of NBA finals, plenty of big games. It's a different level, okay? And yes, Jimmy Butler got hurt in game 2. He went down with the tailbone, landed right on that tailbone. It was just one of those freakish type of plays, a big fall. He did not finish the game. If even up until that point, you could see that this was a different Houston team that had settled down. And I think even if Jimmy Butler plays in that game, that's a game that the Warriors don't win. Certainly, it helped the Warriors a bit, because now you don't have that second legitimate scorer, right? Because my point of contention with the Warriors has been, you don't have a third scorer, and you had 2 scorers, and then that scorer goes away. But look, it really was more from a defensive perspective. Steph Curry, only 20 points in the ball game, 6 of 15 from the field. So you knew that the Rockets were going to figure it out. You knew that the team was going to mesh. The young guys were going to settle down. Because look, Van Vliet's a guy that won an NBA championship with Toronto and was an integral part of winning that championship with Toronto. So those guys settled down. But for me, I always thought that the wild card for the Rockets was Udoka, the head coach. Because, I mean, look, if he had been there with the Celtics would have won a championship with him as the coach. I just think, I mean, what he's been able to bring to the table, and then from a defensive perspective, because if you saw the way that the Rockets guarded Steph Curry, it wasn't just one person. They put a couple of different people on Curry. Van Vliet was responsible for him. Amen Thompson was in part responsible for him as well. So you had a couple of guys that went up against Curry, and they bottled Curry up. But then you look at, in particular, what Jalen Green was able to do. 38 points in the victory. I mean, he just went off, was absolutely unstoppable for the Rockets. And so you couple all of that, and you're talking about, again, a young team with some veterans, with an excellent coach. This is going to be a long series, and then we need to see what things look like moving forward for Jimmy Butler. Now, the one good thing, and even though, you know, it was good for the Rockets and the Rockets needed that victory, but at the end of the day, Golden State basically stole a game on the road, right? So now Houston has to do the same thing. And if Houston wins game 3 on Saturday in San Francisco, then, I mean, I think you're looking at a series that I think you're looking at a situation where I think Houston can go up 3-1 with a chance to close out. Or maybe it's 3-1, then in game 6, Golden State wins it, but then Houston closes it out. So I like this Houston team. I think it's a team that's going to be in the conference finals against OKC. We see what OKC is doing to Memphis. But again, we're going to see what happens on Saturday in San Francisco as the two teams are going to square off. And then we're going to talk about a lot of these series, but I also want to talk, you know, about the Celtics series, because you're looking at the Celtics and Orlando. And Orlando sort of underachieved, I think, a little bit this year when you look at the Magic. The Magic underachieved a bit this year, but I think that was in part because the Magic beset by injuries, and in particular, the injury to Jalen Suggs, because, you know, an emerging you know, star player, a guy that is your point guard. I mean, he goes down. It's hard to come back from that. Sure, Banchero is unbelievable. Franz Wagner is really, really good. Did you see the double spin move that he did on Wednesday in the victory? I mean, that guy can play him. They got some other pieces, but it's not enough to go up against the Celtics, who are ultra, ultra talented. And, you know, when I look at this Celtics team, I mean, the Celtics are so talented that, you know, you've got a situation where Jason Tatum doesn't even play. Like, I mean, I would assume if Jason Tatum could have gone in game two that he would have gone. But he didn't go in game two, and the Magic really didn't need him in game two. I mean, and I would also say this, because to me, for the Celtics, and I've been saying this for a couple of years now, that Kristaps Porzingis is the wild card. Like, he's the guy that if he's on, I mean, the Celtics are going to be good anyway, but if he's on, you can almost forget about it. But he wasn't great in game two. I mean, like, he hit some shots here and there, but he wasn't great in game two, and there was no Jason Tatum, and the Celtics still handled their business against Orlando. So that just shows me how dominant of a team that the Celtics are. And when you couple all of those players coming together, I mean, we look at Pritchard as the sixth man of the year. I mean, this is a team that, you know, has to be favored. And yes, I know we talked a lot about Cleveland and, you know, led the Eastern Conference from wire to wire. But I mean, you talk about the Celtics. I mean, the Celtics are great. Speaking of the Cavaliers, and look, the Cavaliers up 2-0. We move to game 3 on Saturday in Miami. So maybe an opportunity for Miami to maybe win a game. But look, the Cavaliers are just that good. You've got your two bigs down low. You've got, certainly the best guard play in the NBA. You've got, you know, maybe when you talk about guard play, you got two of the best. I thought Miami, because, you know, you had to settle, you know, sort of had to settle down behind all of the Jimmy Butler stuff, but I just don't see what Miami is going to be able to do. So we can talk more about that a little bit later on in the program. Some NFL drafts still to come here also on Box to Row. But up next, we're going to be joined by actor Jason George. Keep it locked.
Have you ever met a single person in your life that enjoys paying taxes? No, no one does. If you can't sleep at night because you have a huge problem with the IRS, I've got some free advice for you. This service is strictly limited to individuals that owe the IRS $10,000 or more in back taxes. And if you qualify, we can guarantee that you won't be writing a big fat check to the IRS, or our services cost you nothing. The first 100 people that call today will get a free tax consultation worth $500. Stop worrying about your IRS problem. We can help you, we promise. Call the tax doctor right now. I mean right now, to learn more.
800-245-3052. 800-245-3052. 800-245-3052. That's 800-245-3052.
Listen up, guys. Are you experiencing any of the following? Fatigue, less drive, poor performance? If so, you may be one of the nearly 30 million men in the U.S. today dealing with ED. But did you know you don't have to pay hundreds for a prescription anymore? And you don't have to deal with the hassle of seeing the doctor or the embarrassment of going to the pharmacy for a certain pill. Now, with one free call, you can find out how Herbal Virility Max can help you feel like a man again. For over a decade, Herbal Virility Max has helped guys just like you put a smile back on their face with improved performance and drive. Call today and ask about our buy one, get one free offer.
Call 800-485-0821. 800-485-0821. 800-485-0821. That's 800-485-0821.
You're listening to From the Press Box to Press Row.
From the Press Box to Press Row.
Box to Box Row.
Box to Row.
Box to Row.
Let's keep things moving here. We're joined by a gentleman. As a matter of fact, you're going to know him as Dr. Ben Warren on Grey's Anatomy and Station 19. But I'm going to tell you what else you're going to know him from. See, this is where I know him from. From E! Back in the day. You're also going to know him from Mistresses. See, he laughs at that because Eve was the show back in the day. We'll talk more about that. Mistresses and so many other TV shows and films. He is Jason George, and he joins us here on Radio Boss. Jason, welcome to the program.
What's good, man? It's good to be here.
We really appreciate having you. I'm going to start here. Easy. It just made sense once Station 19 went away, right, for you to come back to, you never really left, quite frankly, but to come back in terms of being, you know, a full-time, if you will, on Grey's Anatomy.
No, you did right. I never really left. I mean, I was still doing, they used, they were talking about doing a spinoff of Grey's, and nobody knew who was going to be the character that got spun off. I assumed it wasn't me, because I've been recurring on Grey's for years, and I've been a series regular on other shows the whole time. So I assumed, like, I'm the last one in the room. Like, it's not going to be me. But when they told me that they wanted me to do it, it just made sense because Ben and Bailey are this glue they can use between the two shows, because Ben and Bailey are that couple that bend but don't break. So she guest starred on Station 19 a lot. I guest starred on Grey's still a lot, even though, that was still home. So I felt, it never felt like I left, I mean, to your point. And then when Station 19 wrapped up, it just made sense. You know, we had a conversation. It was like, is there still story to tell for Ben? And they had some great ideas that I loved. And I was like, well, then I'm in. So let's go.
Yeah, no, it's a beautiful thing, because you've been doing it since 2010. What does it mean to be a part? It's the longest running scripted drama series on ABC. It's been picked up for another season, I believe I read also. Fantastic show. What does it mean to be part of Grey's Anatomy?
It means I can pay for these damn kids I got. I got three kids. They're expensive. No, look, it's a blessing. I mean, it's the longest running medical drama in television history. We just got picked up for season 22. I got one in college and two more looking at colleges right now. It's meaningful for me for a few different reasons. One, when the pandemic hit, before the pandemic, people didn't think of doctors as first responders. But now we know how much that emergency room is a fundamental part of the first responders, you know, the heroes that they are. We had shows that showed them as heroes, but we didn't feel it in our everyday life until everybody had family members going on the regular, and we realized they're risking their lives to go to work during the pandemic. So being able to represent them has always been, after the pandemic especially, it's even more of a blessing to be able to represent them properly. And then the other part for me is the Ben and Bailey relationship. I mean, to be part of to be one half of a black couple in television that loving, successful, have their arguments, have their ups and downs, but have been there for years. That for me is, you know, you don't see that in TV that often. So all of that for me is some stuff that whenever Grey's goes south, and hopefully that's not anytime soon, I'll have that as a badge of honor that I feel proud about.
No doubt. You mentioned in black, like, not a lot of black male doctors in particular on TV series that's, I mean, that's very, I mean, you mentioned it, but that's very important as well.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, look, and look, you know, somebody had to walk so we could run. So you go back and look at them. I mean, like, I was amazed. There's a shirt out there, and somebody sent me one that has a listing of all these famous television doctors on it, that are black. And the fact that, you know, Warren was on there for me was a huge thing. I mean, it's doctors from other major dramas that you know, and also some comedies, you know what I mean?
Dr. Huxtable.
Black doctors. And so the fact that Huxtable is on there, right? And you know, we will always love Heathcliff. We feel different kinds of ways about Bill. But it's that you know, and then but the kind of doctor, the character, so many of those doctors had they're hard up front. Because we all understood that. There's a thing where, you know, in order to be that successful as a black man, you've taken on a lot of heat. You've gone underneath a lot of pressure. So you're pressurized. It's something for, I enjoy being able to be this doctor who's a black male, who is married to a black woman who is a powerful woman in her own right, and he's not threatened by it. You know what I mean? So all those different elements don't always come together when you have a black doctor on TV.
No doubt about it. That, the voice of Jason George. You can check him out, as a matter of fact, each Thursday, 10 p.m., 9 Central on ABC. He plays the role of Dr. Ben Warren on Grey's Anatomy as he joins us here. I'm going to ask this earlier, talk with you about this early in this conversation. I see your little eagle sliver, right? You see I've got the W on. I see the sliver that you have of the Eagles. Now, of course, you're going to turn around and show us all, right? The Super Bowl champs.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
I gotta tell you, like, I have no problem with the Eagles. I covered the Super Bowl. We talked to plenty of Eagles this past year in New Orleans. I'm gonna tell you the problem I have is with Eagles fans. We went to the game. I wore my stuff. We went to the game. Worst experience I've ever had. Like, what's up with it? I mean, every name in the book, we were cold.
Look, man, look, I lived in Philly I was an Eagles fan long before I lived in Philly. I went to grad school and studied acting in Philadelphia at Temple University. Some actors I really have a lot of love for came through there right before me. It was near New York without being in New York. So, because I was like, if I went to school in New York, I was never going to graduate. So I was like, perfect. I landed in Philly, and I've been an Eagles fan for years at that point. Philly fans are crazy. That's just reality. You just got to accept that. Philly's a whole other level. And you know what? We don't care. We don't care.
I know.
We're good with it. We know it. If you catch any one of us one-to-one, super good people, the best people, shirt off the back, you know, help you out in any way possible. You catch us on game day, everybody catching hands. Everybody getting talked about. Everybody's getting bad-mouthed. It's rough. I know. I live on the West Coast. I live out here in Los Angeles. And I get crazy. Everybody goes, see you. I said, no, because I just get loud. I just get loud. If you're in Philly or you were at the Super Bowl, because I was at the Super Bowl too, they get rowdy, not just loud, they get rowdy. I got to show you this one too.
Okay.
I silent auction at a charity thing the day before the game, and
that's
signed
cool.
Helmet by the entire team.
That's cool.
Picked it up, and I was like, it was one of those things where I was like, either this is going to become this is a bad investment. Or tomorrow it's going to be worth a lot more money than I paid for today, and they made it worth so much more than I paid for it. So I'm ecstatic. I'm sorry. I'm just throwing all my gear around. I'm going to show it all off.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not mad. Like the Eagles beat us. I'm not mad. Good team. I just feel like, and see the thing, you didn't like. It's different for you because you were in Philly, but you didn't grow up like some of these people. My father told me he had season tickets to the Redskins, then Redskins going back 40 years ago. We would go to Philly sometime, and the thing he would say is, we're not wearing any Redskins gifts. I understand why he was saying that. Like, my goodness gracious.
I will apologize on behalf of all of my fellow Eagles fans. Only so much, though. Only so much. Because, look, I'm like, Philly's a hard... Philly's a hard town. It's full of love. It's full of swagger. And it was the capital of the nation at one point in time. But it's got that it's a working class town. It's a working class town. And so they're like, they're gonna tell you about yourself. They have no filter. And there's a part of me that loves that. You know what I mean? I like to know exactly where I stand with somebody. You know what I mean? Most Eagles fans. Now I'm going to defend them a little bit. We get loud. We're gonna tell everybody what we think about their team. Most Eagle fans are not that crazy, are not going to get physical crazy. But there's always one or two that gets to be too much. There's always one or two that gets to be too much. Yeah, I'll admit it.
It didn't come to that because it was myself, my wife, my brother-in-law, my sister. And look, we're DMV people. You understand what I'm saying? But like we're not crazy. Yeah. We ain't crazy though. You know.
Yeah. we're next level. Philly, look, East Coast in general. This is the thing I learned when I moved to the West Coast. East Coast in general are all the original cities of this country. They all started from the inside and then worked their way out. Los Angeles, people lived all on the outskirts. The middle downtown Los Angeles was a donut, was missing for a while. So East Coast cities have an identity. East Coast cities are pressurized, people on top of each other. And so they don't have time to beat around the bush. LA, people will like dance around the issue for a long time and everything like that. Blah, 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 blah. People be fake with you and everything like that. East Coast in general, Philly in particular, yo, I need you to move, dude. Bruh, get your jaw out my way. Get your jaw out my way. And it's a part of me that digs it. There, you know, I mean, in general, I like knowing exactly where we're at. I know there's no airs. If we say we're cool, we are cool. If you say we're cool, there's no BS. We are cool. You say we're family, that's blood practically. West Coast, maybe, yeah, people say stuff and, sounds nice. Yeah. I'm always tripping because I'm an East Coast kid on the West Coast. So I'm like, when I tell you we're cool, like we're cool. If I'm not talking about you or making fun of you, I don't know you or I don't mess with you. It's that simple. That's the East Coast in general, as Philly in particular.
Yeah. No, you're 100%. You hit it right on the head. Actor Jason George joining us here on Box to Row. We're going to step aside, take a break, come back with more of Jason George right here on Box to Row.
You're listening to From the Press Box to Press Row.
Hey, Patrick, right here. This being your fifth Super Bowl, what do you remember most about this whole process with respect to the first Super Bowl? And when I say the whole process, I mean the preparation, not only for the game, but the media and all of that, as opposed to now. How do you kind of compare that? Is it still kind of fun for you?
Yeah, it's still fun. I mean, every Super Bowl is its own experience. But I think more than anything, it's just preparing because you know the process. You know what it takes throughout the week. And it gives you more experience and more calm where you're not worried and you just continue to work to be the best version of yourself you can be and learn from your previous Super Bowls, and hopefully you can play even better in the game when you get out there on Sunday.
Ron Washington, the manager of the Los Angeles Angels, you're old school. So you've instituted this deal where the players are not allowed to have cell phones in the locker room.
Well, you got a young group and you're just trying to get some cohesiveness going on. What does goes on the inside of that clubhouse is our sanctuary. I really don't want to have a whole lot to say about that because it's out there and it's out there improperly. I'm going to leave that at that. I don't want to talk about that.
I got you. But I like it. I like it, Ron. I like it.
I appreciate that. That's because you have a sane mind.
Box to Row live on Radio Row. We're here at Super Bowl 59 in New Orleans. And I'm going to tell you what, we've got a very special guest, right? He was coming over here to talk to us, right? Everybody wanted a piece of him. And now we're able to talk with him. He is the one and only Drew Brees.
Just hanging out, having a good time, enjoying Media Row. Enjoying the city.
Yeah.
You having a good time?
I'm having a great time. 15 years ago today, the Saints won the Super Bowl.
Man, that was a pretty epic time. It was a pretty special time. You know, that was an incredible journey that 2009 season. Just the whole experience was unbelievable. It was surreal. And the city deserved it. The fan base deserved it. Not a dry eye in the house. It was unbelievable.
Kelvin Sampson, the head men's basketball coach at Houston.
Being raised in Pembroke and the Lumbee Nation was always a badge of honor. But getting the eagle feather is a sign of achievement and respect, and I think how you treat other people. Never forgetting where you came from. I grew up in a time when there was segregation. My dad taught and coached in an all-Indian conference. I mean, coming from that area, I learned a lot of life lessons, but getting the eagle feather is a tremendous honor. But you know right away, it's something you share with a lot of other people.
It was Stephen Curry, your progress from Davidson to now with Golden State.
Where I've come from in high school into a small D1 college at Davidson, it's a great story, and I'm just having fun, you know, living my dream and riding the ride.
Dave Roberts, manager of the LA Dodgers, to be person of color and be the manager of the Dodgers, what does that mean to you?
There's not many of us in baseball to do things the right way, to hopefully give other people of color opportunity. Hopefully it just paves the way. So I think that for me, I definitely look at it as responsibility, but something I'm willing to undertake.
Michael B. Jordan.
And I think it's a testament to, you know, what HBCUs mean to people, you know, and having that community and culture and shining a light on the universities, you know what I'm saying, in a real way, and creating a pipeline from these kids in high school and making them feel good about wanting to land at HBCU. We have high talent. And often it's gone and shipped out to other places. It's never poured back into the community. So if we can create an environment that's cool and a beacon of light and people want to feel like they want to be here. And so putting it on the national stage is really big. You know, most of the time these kids don't get televised games. You know what I'm saying? So be able to put them on Turner in a real way was really, really important. And then the brands and then the sponsors, you know what I'm saying? And getting, you know, the NBA, you know, scouts and looks to come in and hopefully like build this thing bigger.
Snoop Dogg is on the mic. Pay attention.
I appreciate the love that I get and I appreciate the sport of hip hop. And it's given me back that same love in return, you know, for the amount of years that I've been doing it. I've always went into it with the same, you know, spirit of I make music for the people. I make it go for them. And I always make them a part of it. And I never separated myself and tried to be a star. I've always wanted to be one of the people that you can look to as somebody that was, you know, like your uncle because of the way that I treat people. And I feel like my career is representative of that. That's why the longevity is there. That's why the love is there. And that's why I maintain the status of, you know, being relevant for so many years.
That is the voice of Kevin Durant.
Oh, yeah, well, I'm just, you know, trying to get better every single day. We've been through a lot as a team, and I enjoy playing with a great group of guys. So, you know, I'm just trying to enjoy every moment of it.
Kevin Hart joins us here.
Right now, I'm on cloud nine. This is the time where I'm in demand, so you make the best of it. You pick great projects, you get behind them, and you put them out. And the goal is to keep them coming. So that's making sure that you're in control of your destiny. And right now, I am.
From the Press Box to Press Row is the sports talk show that is the voice and the talk of HBCU sports, with a flair for pro sports talk and entertainment. Check the show out online at BoxToRow.com.
That's Box to Row, real, relevant radio. Jason George, of course, he plays the role of Dr. Ben Warren, Grey's Anatomy, 10 p.m., 9 central on ABC each and every Thursday. Check him out. I got to take you back to the Eve days, man. Like, that was my show. You understand what I'm saying? UPN, I was in. How old was I when that show? It was like, what, 2003? So I was like 19 or 20 when that show came out. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, what do you remember about those days playing that role in Eve?
You don't even know, man. That show was, that's my fam right there. We lost one of the cast. Natalie DeSalle Reed passed away a little bit ago. And I've been working with the SAG Awards, part of the SAG Awards committee, which makes me technically a producer on the SAG Awards. And I've been there for probably 7 to 8 years now. And when she passed, it was like, you know, we would do the in memoriam, and I walked in, and I'm a chill dude, but I don't ever, like, I was like, she has to be in the memoriam. This has to happen. Figure everything else out, make it happen. You know, cause that's family. Everybody on Eve, that show, my oldest was born about 3 weeks after we wrapped the first season.
Wow.
Of Eve. That show, I've been blessed in the shows that I've done, that I've worked with good people for good people doing good content. And had fun in all of them. But Eve was a whole other level because Eve was still at the height of being a rap star, right? Our DJ before the show was off the chain. Our hype comedian, our warm-up comedian, was funny as hell. So we had this, like, the crowd was off the chain before we even came out. So when you get introduced, it was like coming out to a concert. It's like Eve brought the concert to the, so our live show was just ridiculous and always had incredible amounts of fun for the audience, for us. We would tape an entire show. We would record the show because they'd only do what they call camera blocking, rehearse it so the camera operators know where they need to get the shots and yada, 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 right? But we would record the entire show before the audience came just so we had it in the can. Because one, when you know you've got one in the can, it frees you up as an actor. Now you can get crazy. Now you can have fun. Now you can dance in the high wire, right? Two, sometimes the audience would go so off and be laughing so hard. We didn't break each other. The audience broke us and got us laughing because they got us going. So we knew the audience show was just a whole thing. We just had to hold on. It was that was a special, special time. Some dear friends, you know, I've got, you know, Brian Hooks, Sean McGuire, you know what I mean? Sean and I are still tight. I'm godfather to his kids, you know what I mean? Now that it's all Reed and Eve, you know, we had the blessing to catch up. When Station 19 started, I went on, she was doing one of the morning talk shows. as a regular, and I got to come on there, and we ran back the very first episode of Eve where our characters met, where my zipper got stuck on her dress, and so we had to walk around with our with my crotch attached to her from behind for a little bit. And I was like, we got away with that on TV. We got away with that on TV. On network TV, I got to just, and by the way, there's worse gigs to have than having to, you know, hug up on Eve for 3 years straight. So, yeah, I'm just saying.
Nah, that is so true. And she, man, she went on, I mean, what was with the talk? Like she went on to do the talk, and I mean, you know, it's like, I mean, just went on like you to do really big things too. I mean, she was already doing big things, but you know what I mean? Like even bigger things.
She was the versatility show. She came out, you know, she was the pit bull in the skirt, came out on the stage with a mic in hand, killed it, you know, spitting rhymes, but then people found out she can actually act and she's actually funny. And she had that Lucille Ball energy where she was prepared to just throw her face in the pie. Whatever the joke was, she's like, cool, let's go. And we had a blast because everybody was gaming down to try whatever the writers came up with. And the writers came up with some crazy stuff. They came up with some crazy stuff. But we had a great time, you know what I mean? And then she went and did the talk because she's smart and a very good communicator. We would joke that, like, she's as comfortable on the street as she is in boardrooms. And, you know, and now she's living in the UK and doing her thing. So, you know, that's my girl right there. She's always going to be family.
No doubt about it. Jason George joining us here for a couple of more moments. Speak to, you know, what you've got a lot of things that are important to you, but mentoring and inspiring the next generation, generation is important to you. Why so?
Oh, it's genetic. Look, my mom was a teacher. My mom was an educator. My mother was president of the teachers union where I grew up, and she taught learning disabled kids all while growing up. And I saw firsthand, and she would talk about before a kid with just dyslexia might end up in the same class with a kid with Down syndrome. They got very different situations and everything like that. And so reaching out, being able to put your mind and being able to walk in somebody else's shoes and realizing, and I would see firsthand how powerful it was when she helped somebody get to that next stage, get to that next goal, you know, would she help somebody grow? I would see how, because look, teachers get beat down. I would see how much it would weigh on her. And then every time she'd have a success, I would see how it would erase everything else. And she was good for another, you know, year, 2 years, whatever, to keep going. And so that was the thing that inspired me to be like, whenever I get a chance to come across people who just in life or be it in the craft of acting, in the entertainment industry writ large, anything I can do to help try and make life easier for those people, help pave a way for them to for them to grow and try and meet some of their goals. I know what that, I saw from my mom what that feels like, because there's nothing better. Like, you know, look, at the end of the day, one of my favorite quotes I learned when I was in college, University of Virginia, actually. It said, all you hold in your cold, dead hand is that which you've given away. You can't take it with you, right? At the end of the day, you're gone. People are going to talk about you. What are they going to say? And when you've actually helped raise up that next generation, you got plenty of people going to say beautiful things about you on the other side. And that's not why I do it, but it's one of the things I hope will happen. If and when I check out, you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I feel that. What a fantastic career you've had. What most comes to your mind when you, I don't know if you've ever had a chance to sit back and think about your career. Just what comes to your mind most when you've had that chance to sit back and think about this great career that you've had?
You know, I mean, look, I feel blessed. I mean, knock all the wood in the room. I've never been too out of work. I've never had huge gaps in running onto television. But the thing that hits me is I've been blessed that, you know, I work with Debbie Allen, who is an absolute icon. My boss is Shonda Rhimes. Shonda Rhimes took me to meet Barack Obama. That right there is the thing where you're like, whose boss takes them to meet a president, let alone a black woman who's the one in charge, takes you to meet the first black president. There's a whole other level of stuff. You know, my first boss in this town was Aaron Spelling, another iconic direct, you know, producer and everything like that. So I've been able to work with and for incredible people, and that's the and learn a little bit of something from each of them. That's the thing that for me I hold on to. You know what I mean? That those moments where you meet somebody and you're like, you know, we actually doing this. We actually doing this thing. And then after that is the other side of it, just the times laughing off camera with my castmates, you know, like with Eve, or I'll never forget line in we're both half naked, and when I say half, I'm being generous, because it's a sick, you know, and we're lying there, and it's weird. It's a weird gig, right? And so I just went, so how's your portfolio looking? Your stocks okay? Everything like that. And she started laughing. She was like, it's good. I'm trying to diversify a little bit. And we just started laughing. Cameras were not rolling, and we had the hardest laugh, because we're like, our job is weird. Those are the moments that, like, you have with your fellow actors. Those are the things I remember. You know what I mean? Those are cool. The stories that you come across that aren't on camera. That's the stuff that I hold on to. Some of them I share. Some of you got to hold close to the vest, because they're too crazy for the world to know.
I'm sure it is. So last thought, what's your, you know, you've got Grey's Anatomy. What else are you doing, and what's next for you?
Yo, my brother and I work on producing some projects. I'm looking to direct more. Maybe, you know, like the producing and directing side of things, I'm trying to grow. But I'm an actor first, foremost, and always. I'm always going to be, you know, my dream is to die on either a theater stage or a sound stage. But, you know, I'm gonna be in front of somebody, you know, speaking some written words when I drop. So that's always going to be there. But I'm trying to grow this whole the other thing, trying to tell stories that I think are important and worth telling. And, you know, my brother and I are working on doing stuff. So directing and producing is the stuff that's on the table right now. I'm growing that.
Man, that's a beautiful thing. Jason George, check him out. Dr. Ben Warren is who he plays on Grey's Anatomy, 10 p.m., 9 Central, Thursdays on ABC. Jason George joins us here. Jason, an absolute pleasure. This has been a blast, man. Continued success in all you do.
Oh, appreciate you, man. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a good time. Go Birds. I'm going to say we're going to do it again. Get me on after we win the next Super Bowl. When we win the next one, we'll come back and do it again.
What a fun conversation with actor Jason George joining us right here on Box to Row. Huge Philadelphia Eagles fan. And look, even in the draft, I mean, the Eagles lost a couple of guys from the Super Bowl winning team. Sweat, the defensive end, no longer with the team. But, I mean, still had, even though it was the number 31 pick, still had a first-round pick and able to go and get Jihad Campbell, the linebacker from Alabama. So, you know, I mean, if you're still able to get a coming off a Super Bowl, and even if it's a low first round pick, if you're still able to get a first round pick, you could develop that guy. And we've seen, you know, what the Eagles can do with Howie Roseman drafting and those types of things. The Eagles are definitely the team to beat when you're talking about coming into the 2025 NFL season. So this conversation with Jason George will be shared on the Box to Row YouTube channel, so you can check it out there. Also on our website at boxtorow.com under the podcast link. So we've still got plenty more here on the program. Of course, we've the last couple of segments talking with actor Jason George. We opened things up talking about the NBA, the playoffs. I mean, you can even look at that Detroit and Knicks series. I mean, I wouldn't have been surprised if Detroit won that series, but Detroit now a little bit on the ropes because the Knicks have taken home court back by virtue of the victory on Thursday, 118-116 in a close game. And we'll see how the Pistons had some injuries, but we'll see how the Pistons respond and bounce back from that. Up next here on Box to Row, talking NFL draft, and Shedeur Sanders does not get drafted in the first round. I'll give you my thoughts. Keep it
more
locked.
Of Box to Row with Donald Ware is on the way. home sales are down 31% across America, and mortgage rates are on the rise. If your home is not selling, you need to call our experts right now at the Quick Cash Hotline. We have investors ready to pay you cash for your property, regardless of the condition it's in. Most of our closings can happen in about 7 days. You don't have to worry about a buyer getting approved. You don't have to worry about showing your home. One simple call right now. Just pick up the phone and call us. I'll give you the number in a second. We will negotiate with you a price to buy your home. It's that simple. If you're ready to sell your home right now, any home, any condition, and you don't want to put money into it, no problem. We'll buy it from you. Call right now. It's a free call.
800-470-7113. 800-470-7113. 800-470-7113. That's 800-470-7113.
On last week's From the Press Box to Press Row with Donald Ware.
This isn't about NIL. NIL stands for name, image, and likeness. And to me, what name, image, and likeness is, if I'm talking about paying someone, it's about what they're going to bring to me from a marketing standpoint. Not necessarily what they're going to do on the field. What these guys do on the field is mostly why they're getting paid. So why do we even use the term name, image, and likeness?
From the Press Box to Press Row is one of the hottest sports talk shows in the country. Join Donald each week as he takes you on a journey through the world of HBCU sports and pro sports and interviews with top sports and entertainment figures. That's From the Press Box to Press Row each week on your favorite station.
It's Donald Ware, from the Press Box to Press Row.
Really, before that point, is really just a lot of opinions and then a difference of opinions as far as where guys can be. But as we get closer to the draft and the draft date in April, that's where things really start to crystallize a little bit as far as where the NFL or potential teams really have them on the draft board.
ESPN NFL draft analyst Jordan Reed joining us right here on the program on last week and was speaking about Shedeur Sanders, because the question that I asked him is, how did we go from him possibly being the number one overall pick to him and Cam Ward being perhaps one and two, to Shedeur slipping to number nine to the Saints, to possibly slipping to number 20, I think it was 23, to the Steelers, and or 21 to the Steelers, and then we saw where he didn't even get drafted in the first round. And so he spoke about that in terms of the process. And again, thank you for making Box to Row a part of your day. In the last segment, we were joined by actor Jason George here on the program. So for me, I watched Shedeur Sanders play all 4 years, and I'm no expert. I mean, I think, you know, when you watch certain guys play, like, for instance, I'll give you an example. The very first time that I ever had a chance to see Caleb Williams play, I was in Atlanta, had just called a football game, and was just in the hotel room, because even at this was 2021, and even at that time didn't have a time during the season to watch a whole lot of college football, but we're just kind of sitting around, and I saw Caleb Williams play. He was playing for Oklahoma at that time, and as I watched that game, I don't remember who Oklahoma was playing, I said, that guy is going to be a National Football League player, quarterback, and a star. I could tell right away. And sometimes you can tell when guys are going to be good, and sometimes it's hard to tell, right? Like, when you look at the differences between Cam Ward and Shedeur Sanders, I mean, I think they jump out. I mean, I think you're talking about a Cam Ward who's much more agile, who can run a little bit, has got a cannon for an arm. And then you look at the numbers in terms of production, because I think that's sometimes where we get caught up, or where people get caught up sometimes, is you look at these numbers and these guys that play in college. But it's not about the numbers, because sometimes you even have Heisman Trophy winners. Speaking of Heisman Trophy winners, Charlie Ward is now the new head men's basketball coach at Florida A&M, former Heisman Trophy winner. What sport did he end up playing? He ended up playing in the NBA, had a good career in the NBA, didn't play in the National Football League. So sometimes you've got guys that got great numbers, get all of these awards, but it doesn't translate into the National Football League. But if I look at some of the traits of both Sanders and Ward, yes, when you really look at it, it's no doubt in my mind that Ward should have been and was the higher pick quarterback. But I also look at what Shedeur Sanders did throughout the course of his career. So coming out of college, or coming out of high school into Jackson State, he was a four-star recruit, had an absolutely fantastic freshman year. Now you can talk to me about it was FCS ball or what have you, but it was still college football. And he was excellent, right? High completion percentage, didn't make a lot of mistakes. I think one of the pitfalls was that he didn't run. He wasn't a runner. Matter of fact, he had negative yards. Followed that up the next year, HBCU National Player of the Year. Also did much better in terms of not taking as many sacks, and I think he had a positive yardage. It wasn't like he rushed for a couple hundred yards. It was minimal, but it was positive, right? Then you make the transition from FCS and Jackson State and the SWAC to Power 5 in Colorado, his junior year, third year. What does he do? Had a really good year, okay? And then this past year in 2024, had a phenomenal year from a numbers perspective. And look, and not only from a numbers perspective, because again, it's not the numbers don't necessarily translate into the National Football League. As a matter of fact, generally they don't. We can talk about production. Yes, production on the level that you're on, but how does it translate? And so that's why people talk about who has the better floor, who has the better ceiling, etc. But again, he did complete 74% of his passes. It wasn't like it was a bunch of dinks and dunks. He was throwing the football down the field, okay, and had an excellent year. But this is the thing about the National Football League, right? Because, again, we go from a guy that's top two pick perhaps to dropping, and then he all of a sudden falls out. And I don't think it had anything necessarily to do with if people wanted to talk about the bravado and all of those things. It wasn't that. As much as it was a couple of things. A, no team had him as with a first round grade based upon what they saw on the tape. A lot of what was being talked about was what people like media people were talking about, right? And just looking at the numbers, but you got to dig deeper into that. And how does it translate in his play into the National Football League? So obviously, the teams did not have a first-round grade on Shedeur Sanders. That's number one. The other thing I think related to this, and I would say would be even more, because sometimes you may not have a first-round grade on a guy, but if you've got a real need for a player, then you may draft that player even if you don't have a first-round grade on him. The other thing is, when you look at the quarterback position in the National Football League, it is, I mean, you've got really good quarterbacks. I mean, we can talk about if a guy's a top 15 or a top 20 quarterback. Well, even if you're a top 15 or a top 20 quarterback, you're still pretty good these days, where that may not have been the case years ago. And then you look, okay, who needed a quarterback? Well, the Titans needed a quarterback, and they went with the better quarterback in Cam Ward, right? The Browns needed a quarterback, but the Browns decided to trade back a little bit. We'll talk a little bit more about that. But the Browns still felt as though they had some other needs, and so they went with Mason Graham, the defensive tackle out of Michigan at number five. Right, you could look at the Raiders, but the Raiders have Geno. I mean, if you want to look to the future, that's fine. But the quarterback right now, Geno Smith. The Jets are solidified at quarterback. The Panthers are as well. Now, one of the surprises, the Saints decided not to go with Shedeur Sanders. As a matter of fact, went with Kelvin Banks Jr., the offensive tackle, because even though things may not be settled with Derek Carr, he's still under contract, right? You know the Bears weren't going to take a quarterback. You knew the 49ers weren't. You knew the Cowboys weren't. You figured that Miami probably wasn't going to. The Colts weren't going to. You knew the Falcons weren't going to. You knew the Cardinals were not going to. Bengals, Seahawks, Tampa, Broncos. And then you come to the Steelers. And the Steelers said, you know what? We're going to go with Derek Harmon, the defensive tackle out of Oregon, because of all the traits he has, Cam Hayward-like traits. And we're going to look to the future. Maybe he can play right now, but certainly in the future. And that's where things start for, especially defensively, generally speaking, but especially when you look at the Steelers. And under Mike Tomlin, the Steelers have always had great defensive lines, right? You knew the Chargers didn't need a quarterback. So as you go down the line, now, when the Giants traded up out of the second round to go into the first round, I'm like, okay, this is where the Giants are going to take Shedeur Sanders. And even after all of that, after meeting with Shedeur quite a bit, the Giants still decided to go with Jackson Dart from Mississippi, right? Then again, you go Falcons, Ravens don't need a quarterback, Lions, Commanders, Bills don't need one. The Eagles don't need one. The Chiefs don't need one. So there was only a couple of spots where Shedeur Sanders could have gone. And there were what? We said the Saints. We said Pittsburgh that really needed a quarterback like right now. That was it. And the Giants. And even then, you know, the Giants have Russell Wilson, right? The Browns, you figure. The Browns went out and got some guys. So, you know, they felt like he wasn't a first round grade. You when you get a first rounder, you've got to pay him first round money because it's a guaranteed $4 million contract. That's why I've been so big in terms of HBCU players being drafted, because every player that gets drafted gets guaranteed money, and that first round guaranteed money is much better than once you get out of the first round. Okay. And because even if you get a second-round guy, you can normally sign a four-year contract. There's no team option for a fifth year. So that may be an advantage not to being drafted. And I mean, but look, it's just one of those deals, and Shedeur Sanders more or less got caught up in the numbers and was not a first-round pick. Got to ask my listeners on 1010XL in Jacksonville, like, you guys have got to be feeling great to move up to be able to get Travis Hunter, who can play corner, who can play wide receiver. I think he just needs, you know, he's a guy that can play wide receiver, but once they coach him up and he gets into the route running and the nuances of the wide receiver position, I think he's going to be even better. Because when I look at the Jaguars, like, this is a team, what, going back a couple of years ago, that should have won a first-round playoff game, was really doing it. But this is a team, I think, that's got a lot of talent on the team. And by the way, Jaguars fans, you're going to like De'Ami Brown. I know it doesn't seem like a great – you're going to like this kid. I think if he's developed, you're going to like him, okay? You're able to go out and get him. I mean, you know, Trevor Lawrence, Travis Etienne and June. Like, there's some players on this team, just needed a new culture. It's got a new coach. So I think things are really looking up for the Jaguars. And so, again, our listeners in Jacksonville, 1010XL, I want to hear from you on how you feel about the Jaguars moving up to take Travis Hunter. Hit me up on X at DWare1. Look, my time is about up. I thank you for yours. Thank you to Jason George, actor Jason George, for joining us today here on Box to Row. For more information on the program, visit our website, BoxToRow.com. And always remember to support those that support you. Box to Row is produced by DW Communications. Brothers on my jock for the way I hold a piece of steel. So what you saying?
what you're saying.